This TEDx Manhattan coverage has been made possible by the Glenwood Institute. For more information, visit glenwood.org.
This is part two of a special feature on Heritage Radio Network in conjunction with TEDx Manhattan. In the spirit of ideas worth spreading, TED has created a program called TEDx. TEDx is a program of local, self-organized events that bring people together to share a TED-like experience. The TEDx Manhattan event is called Changing the Way We Eat, and will be broadcast live as a webcast all day on February 16th. The event will be led by food and farming industry experts, including Anna LePay, Chef Ann Cooper, Peter Hoffman, and many more. On this recording, Aaron Fairbanks speaks with Gary Hirschberg, chairman of Stonyfield Farms, about genetically modified organisms in our food supply and the labeling around those GMOs.
All right. We are on the line with Gary Hirschberg, chairman of Stonyfield Farm, one of the world, or the world's actually leading organic yogurt producer. Gary, your bio reads like a who's who of like dream accomplishments. And so I'm not going to try and cover it all. I'm just going to touch on a few highlights that jumped out for us. In 2011, Gary was nominated by President Obama to serve on the Advisory Committee for Trade and Policy Negotiations. Gary is also the chairman and a founding partner of Just Label It, We Have the Right to Know, which is the national campaign to label genetically engineered foods. And he's also co-author of Label It Now, What You Need to Know About Genetically Engineered Foods. So today we're doing a little preview chat, trying to wet the whistle, if you will, for your upcoming TEDx Manhattan talk, which will be taking place later this year, February 16th, here in New York City. But right now you're coming to us on the line from Rome. Is that correct?
That is correct. Nice to be with you.
It's great. It's great to have you. So I'm curious, you know, your talk for TEDx is going to be focused on genetically modified organisms, but what aspect of that are you looking to delve into?
Well, we'll be talking about labeling. As with climate science, for example, there's a raging scientific debate about the health and safety aspects of genetically engineered crops and foods. We're not getting into that. That's going to take a decade or more to work out. A lot of the findings will only really come from actual experience of looking epidemiologically at populations. The point of view of Just Label It and my organization is that while science is resolving the long-term health and safety consequences of these crops, consumers, in the meanwhile, should have the right to know whether we're eating and buying these ingredients. There's a wide-ranging number of reasons that people believe they have the right to know. But the reality is that 55 other countries around the world, all of the European Union, China, Russia, literally every major trading partner we have in the world gives their citizens the right to know whether or not they're eating GE foods. In the U.S., we don't offer that right, which is a bit ironic for supposedly the freest country on earth.
Yeah, I think that's one of those kind of interesting things about American society, you know, and often in these types of conversations, it's bound up with the social, political, economic, the cultural climate that we're in. And I'm curious, why do you think that we haven't demanded this sooner?
Well, we've been demanding it. To understand what's going on with labeling, you have to go back to 1992, and I think here's where the answer to your question lies. Back in 1992, under then President George H.W. Bush and Vice President Quayle, there was an organization called the Council on Competitiveness that got involved with eliminating bureaucratic or governmental interference with commercial development. And this was, of course, keep in mind that the first genetically engineered crops were legalized in 1996. And so on the eve of these crops coming into commerce, the Council on Competitiveness made, which was our industry, made quote-unquote recommendations, provided advice and guidance to the Food and Drug Administration that because genetically engineered foods taste the same, look the same, and smell the same as non-GE foods, the definition of that they should not be labeled. That the definition of materiality, what is material for consumers, should be limited to organoleptic, you know, whether you could taste or smell it or see it. And so this was a brilliant play by industry to protect their interests. And, of course, consumers had almost no input into this process whatsoever, and the very same regulations that were put in place 20 years ago remain in place today. So there have been many, many efforts to try to reverse that, the guidance, but the reality is I think what is unique about American culture, and coming to the answer to your question, is that we have, because of our lack of campaign finance reform, because of the power and influence of, in this case, large chemical companies, who you know, we know as biotech companies, but fundamentally they sell chemicals, Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, and so forth. They have enormous, enormous lobbying infrastructures, huge amounts of reach. They obviously spend tens of millions of dollars on each election cycle, and they're very well protected from consumer quote-unquote interference in their interests. And I think that's the problem. In other countries, when, for example, the European Union approved genetically engineered foods for commercialization, they did so with the proviso that they had to be labeled. But we, again, didn't have that kind of consumer interest in our policymaking apparatus.
We are seeing some movement on this issue. I know in the past election cycle, you know, Prop 37 out on the West Coast gained some traction. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the involvement of the organizations that you represent in that fight, and talk a little bit about some of the money behind who is supporting that debate.
Sure. Well, so to be clear, we have ultimately a need for a federal solution. The idea that we're going to solve this on a state-by-state basis is, I don't think anyone, even the advocates in California or Washington State or New Mexico or all, there's 21 different states where there are efforts underway. I don't think anybody feels that we can have 50 different state laws. But the point that you make is absolutely right, that sooner or later, one of these states is going to pass. And here's actually what's happened, and then I'll tell you about the organization. What's actually happened is that in the 20 years or so since these crops were approved, we, again, as I mentioned at the outset of this conversation, we have more questions than answers about their long-term safety. But one thing we know for sure is that because insecticide resistance or herbicide resistance has been the primary genetic trait that's been bred into these GE crops, what has ended up happening is America and farmers are using far more herbicides, for example, hundreds of millions of pounds, literally 527 million more pounds, since 1996 when these first herbicide-tolerant crops were approved. And that has led to not only an explosion of herbicide use, which, of course, you know, ultimately concerns a lot of us, but also increased resistance on the part of 26 different weeds that now are no longer able to be controlled by formerly effective herbicides, which means that we're now having to use even stronger herbicides. And you have to keep remembering that it's the chemical companies who own these seeds that also sell these chemicals. And so what's happened is that citizens in many states and soil scientists and religious groups who don't like messing with God's work and with nature and so on have formed a kind of unique fabric or quilt of coalitions around the country. Again, our organization, Just Label It, you can find out more at justlabelit.org, is focused on the federal solution, but we're also facilitating and supporting information to each of the state efforts. As you mentioned, Prop 37 in California, a ballot initiative in the fall, a citizens initiative, came bloody close to passing. We got to 48.6% of the vote. But that's amazing in when you consider that the other side, the anti-labeling, the non-37 folks, spent $46 million to stop that initiative. with literally ads running all day, every day in the final month. That coalition, the anti-group, was funded, the base funding, around a third of the funding was the chemical companies I've mentioned earlier, but then large grocery manufacturers, large food companies, the auspices of the Grocery Manufacturers Association, the GMA, funded the rest of it. The problem for these companies, and it goes right back to your point, is that, you know, they're not going to be able to keep funding $40 to $50 million for every one of these states. As I said, 21 states have efforts underway. Washington State just gathered 350,000 signatures in the last month for a ballot initiative. New Mexico may pass it at the legislative level. Connecticut, Maine, Vermont, many, many other states have efforts underway. So, again, in the maturation of this whole debate, 20 years into it, I think what's finally happening, to your point, is that a critical mass of sanctions and concerns have finally gotten to the point where one of these states is going to pass, and even some of the big opponents, some of the big companies who've been trying to stop the transparency, they will privately admit that it's now a question of when, not whether, we get to finally get the same rights that citizens in China and Russia have.
You know, part of me wonders, at this point, I think it's relatively safe to assume that in the vast majority of our food supply, that what you are consuming, if you're consuming any type of grain or grain-based product, is a GMO contaminated or GMO food, as there's such a large percentage of the crops produced here in the U.S. are GMO. And I'm curious, for your business at Stonyfield, because you are certified organic, because you're producing a huge amount of yogurt, and there's no kind of strict kind of labeling rules, how does that challenge your business with regards to sourcing feed for your animals to produce the milk? I mean, does that create different layers of challenge for you?
Really, really, really great question. So just to be clear for your listeners, the three primary crops that have been genetically engineered are soy, corn, and cotton. And you're absolutely correct. If you're eating any kind of processed foods in this country, most likely you're getting corn or soy, which means something like 80% of processed food now contains some GE ingredients. It's been a remarkably successful effort. And, of course, keep in mind that the same chemical companies selling these seeds are also selling the chemicals that, the herbicides that these crops now tolerate. But other crops, as you point out, we now have GE alfalfa, which is basically grass. We have GE sugar beets. We have, and I'm sure your listeners are probably aware that the first human foods are now making their way through the pipeline. There is now a sweet corn that's genetically engineered for humans, and there's actually a GE salmon, the first animal, first owned, and keep in mind, these are patented owned and unique crops or foods. There's a GE apple that doesn't turn brown. That's about to be. We think it's close to approval. So you're correct. When you're a company like ours, an organic company who is absolutely, first of all, it's not legal for us to knowingly use GE foods. But more of the point, we don't want to use them. We don't want to buy into this whole pesticide herbicide cycle. Our sourcing is really difficult. For example, I have a soy yogurt called Old Soy. We cannot buy that. We cannot source that soy domestically anymore. When we started with it 15 years ago, no problem. But now we have to get it from other countries. And truthfully, what it entails is just a lot more auditing, a lot more inspection. You have to actually send people out into the field, go to the farms, and confirm that these products are in fact GE free. So again, we're not saying that GE crops should be, banned or ended. They're here. I don't think they're going anywhere. But we are saying that consumers should be able to know whether they're there or not. And just one really quick interesting point to you. You know, I mentioned a moment ago, this just shows you the inconsistency at the federal level. GE crops are patented, as I mentioned. You, if you're Monsanto or Dow or DuPont, you can actually own these new organisms that you've created. So they're unique and they're distinctive as recognized by commerce. But at the FDA, as I told you at the beginning, they say they're not unique. They're not different. They're not material. Therefore, there's no reason for you to know whether you're eating them or not. So one end of our government is saying they're totally unique, and the other is saying they're the same. Well, clearly, this is a not sensible or sustainable policy at any level.
Well, one of the things that I think is so interesting about this debate is, we're thinking about this idea of risk and thinking about risk across a multitude of levels. But even just for a personal consumer, if you're looking at evaluating risk in your dietary decisions, you're looking at hazards, what is the probability of something occurring and what are the relative consequences to that? And in the absence of labeling, as consumers, we're not able to perform that kind of equation for ourselves. I mean, that decision is essentially being made for someone else. And I was curious to see that it was 92% of American consumers are pro-labeling. Is that correct?
That's right. We actually have independent data conducted by the Melman Group, a research group out of D.C., that shows that 92% of consumers, what Melman said when they announced these results is that 92% of Americans don't agree on anything. And by the way, there's almost no statistical difference between Republicans, Democrats, or independents. There's no difference among men or women, rural, urban, old, young. This is just, given the chance, the choice, people believe that they should have the right to know. That doesn't mean 92% are against eating these foods. It just means 92% want that right to know.
Now, you are also the managing director of Stonyfield Europe, and I'm wondering if you can just share, when you're traveling abroad, when you're kind of trying to explain to European citizens the American position on GE labeling, what is the response you're getting?
Well, you can imagine there's a lot about the U.S. system that is bewildering to folks here. The amount of money that is spent in elections in the U.S., the amount of corporate influence just in the last cycle alone is just completely shocking, the length of our elections. So it's not that hard for folks in Brussels and the European Parliament or, here in Italy or in France or in Ireland where I have organic colleagues, it's not so hard for them to connect the dots, to understand the reason we have such a bizarre and as you say, ultimately, a not very democratic process when it comes to our labeling is clear. It's the influence of money in our policymaking. Having said that, there's an additional problem that is created by the U.S. Policy, and that is trade. For example, Japan, which buys 50% of American alfalfa exports, will not accept genetically engineered alfalfa. So now that we have approved GE alfalfa, this is going to dramatically hurt our exports, one of the real bright spots in the American economy. Germany right now is contracting with Brazilian farmers for the Brazilians to produce guaranteed GE-free soy. This is again cutting into U.S. exports. So this is not just a policy that doesn't make sense for consumers. It doesn't make sense for farmers. It doesn't make sense for anybody in the food business who wants to participate in the global market.
On that note, I know that Tom Vilsack, the Secretary of Ag, is going to be with us for another term. Do you expect to see any leadership from him and his office on these issues?
The answer is yes. We have seen Secretary Vilsack has been attempting to put forward a kind of a covenant, a concept known as coexistence, where organic and non-GMO farmers can coexist, can work alongside farmers who want to go with GMO. So things like buffer zones and compensation. What happens if my GMO corn blows into your non-GMO farm? So he's been attempting to have these kinds of discussions, and there's been some very high-powered panels convened. The problem, again, is that this is bigger than one Secretary of Agriculture. Ultimately, we need our president. We need leadership above him. This is an issue that requires an integrated federal solution, bringing in the EPA, the FDA, HHS, you know, when I mentioned trade staff, Secretary of State, and so forth, to have a unified policy that makes sense. In the same way that the FDA in 1992 got kind of, even to the point where they overruled some of their own scientists, got kind of marginalized with limiting citizens' rights to know. You've seen the same kind of policy showing up at USDA and other agencies as well. And what we really need to do is we need someone to sit back and say, hey, wait a second, does it make sense that we're putting hundreds of millions more pounds of herbicides out there? Shouldn't the consumer at least have the right to know? And that's going to take leadership from the White House.
Gary, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real honor to have you on. We hope when you're stateside that we'll get to see you in the studio sometime soon.
It'd be a pleasure, and thanks so much for covering this incredibly important issue.
So, folks, definitely make sure to tune in to the TEDx Manhattan. It will be a live webcast on February 16th. You can hear more on Gary's piece on this issue and from tons of other great speakers on the issue. And to learn more about his work through Just Label It, you can visit www.justlabelit.org or check out www.stonyfield.com. Thank you so much for listening.
You can find all of our coverage on the HRN Events and Specials page at heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening.